Hello, everybody. Welcome to the WDW Main Street Podcast. This podcast is being brought to you by Elite Vacation Homes. If you need a home in the Central Florida area, contact Elite Vacation Homes at elitevacationhomes.com. The show is also being brought to you by Scooter Vacations. If you need a scooter for any of the theme parks in the Central Florida area, contact Scooter Vacations. Show is also being brought to you by American Tourist Travel. We can book all your Disney travel needs. Contact us at American Tourist Travel.com. And it's also being brought to you by David's Vacation Club Rentals. If you want to rent any of the DVC resorts, contact David's at David's Vacation Club Rental or DVCRequest.com. And now on with the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the WDW Main Street Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my good buddy Dan. Hey, Dan, pull up a stool.
Hey, Doug, how you doing?
I wasn't drinking before the show, but now I'm planning on it. And we're also joined by our good buddy, Bob Sycon. How you doing tonight, Bob?
Grab a turkey leg, boys.
I need more than a turkey leg about this at the point that I'm going through. But here we are, guys. We're going to do a quick show for this week to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. So let's wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving, everybody out there.
Yeah. So to start the show, we've been having wonderful times with Skype again, which is driving me nuts. I'm going to have to do things that I don't even want to talk to you guys about to get this working right again. But it just adds to the whole frustration of the week. You guys knew Sunday when I recorded a telephone pole fell on my deck. Did you hear about that, Bob?
No.
Yeah.
As we were recording during the show, the storm blew down my telephone pole and landed on my deck and broke my awning.
Oh, jeez. So, no, I haven't caught up with the show from Sunday yet. Did you talk about or did you not talk about it on the show?
No, we did. It was live during the show. It happened. So, yeah, we talked about it. But,
oh, jeez.
No, it was beautiful. So, to boot, the guy shows up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon to look at it and said somebody's going to be back. What time do you think they came back to cut the pole down?
2 o'clock in the morning?
Oh, you're close. You got a guess, Bob?
I'm going to say 2 days later.
No, they showed up at 3:45 a.m. to cut my pole down. There was six of them. It took – how many electricians does it take to cut a pole? It was already laying down on my deck. Me and my brother could have had it cut in 20 minutes ourselves and hauled out of here. It took six of them to cut it, and they had the chainsaw running in my backyard at 3:50 in the morning. So – needless to say, I'm up because my dog was going insane, and I was so tempted to just open the back door and say, whoops, I didn't realize you guys were out there.
Yeah, that's frustrating, and, you know, I hate to say it, but some of them guys, once they get on overtime and triple time, they're in no hurry to get done.
No, because after they were done cutting it, they sit out in front of my house, and it took everything for me not to go back out there. They had three diesel truck sitting in my front yard on the street, but they weren't in my driveway, but on the street you could hear them running from the house. Now, I mean, how, if I wanted to go back to sleep, I couldn't listen to a diesel truck sitting in your front yard.
Oh yeah, diesel idling is aggravating. It's a very disturbing noise.
Yeah, so I had three of them. So it was a beautiful week, and then we go to record a nice show to talk about a little bit of Bob for our website did a review on Raglan Road, and we're going to talk about the newest announcement for Epcot. So, but I had to complain a little bit because Mr. Skype decided not to let us do a show almost tonight.
Yeah, but we persevered.
Yeah, yous two talked and I persevered. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, well, we were having a great chat.
Yeah, I know. It was wonderful. So, Dan, do you want to read the article about the announcement?
Yeah,
well, we're so shocked by this announcement, too. We never even thought that something like this was going to happen.
Right, right. We've talked about this over and over. I guess my only point would be I just didn't think it would happen right in this time frame with everything else that's going on. But anyways, D23, the Disney fan club, held its, I think it's every other year they gather, and all the Disney execs and bigwigs get together, and they like to release little tidbits of news about each of the areas of the company, whether it be the Disney store, the Disney parks, you know, anything Disney you can think of. And it, for this particular piece of news that came out, it was Parks and Resorts Chairman Bob Chapek said Saturday at D23 at the Contemporary Resort that there would be a major transformation at Epcot. Visitors can likely expect less emphasis on exhibits and replicas and more on the characters and rides typical of most Disney theme parks. Once envisioned as a working city, Epcot is currently part museum, part ethnic marketplace, part theme park. Disney has been making a subtle shift to the typical theme park for years, but now may be accelerating it. We will be doing some major transformation at Epcot in the future, said Chapek. It will be more Disney. It will be more relevant than it is today. And at the same time, it will stay true to our original vision. Stay tuned. There's lots more to come on Epcot. Obviously, the company wouldn't give details about Chapek's remarks. This summer, a ride featuring wide-eyed animated princesses of Frozen replaced the old Maelstrom attraction in World Showcases Norway. And most of Innovations, which featured science and technology displays, has been closed. There has been speculation that a Ratatouille ride similar to the one already at Disneyland Paris could open in Epcot's France, and that Guardians of the Galaxy thrill ride could replace Ellen's Energy Adventure in Future World. Disney has not confirmed either rumor. It's part of what David Koenig, an author of several books about Disney, calls the Mickey Mousing of every Disney park on the planet. He finds the trend dismaying. The different lands and the different attractions, they each have sort of their own flavor, he said. Perhaps vanilla is the most popular flavor, but I don't want to go into the business that only sells me vanilla ice cream. Other theme park experts say Epcot needs a change because its nearly 35-year-old formula of cultural and technological exhibits can't stand on their own today. Epcot has an identity crisis, said Scott Smith, an assistant hospitality professor at the University of South Carolina. That will become more obvious, he said, as Disney refurbishes its Hollywood Studios theme park to include Star Wars and Toy Story lands. Right now, Epcot relies heavily on special events such as the International Food and Wine Festival to lure visitors, said Jim Hill, an industry blogger and editor of JimHillMedia.com. Indeed, Epcot has expanded its signature International Food and Wine and Flower and Garden Festivals to the point where the events take up to 5 months of the year. On Monday, a new event was announced, the International Festival of the Arts, running for 6 weeks, starting January 17th. That excited some Disney fans, eagerly anticipating the blend of Disney-themed art, food, and entertainment. Others think it's overkill. Gee, look, another festival at Epcot, somebody wrote in the comments section of the Disney Parks blog. Paraphrasing The Incredibles, once every day is a special event, no day will be special. With its emphasis on festivals, culture, and science, many consider Epcot the adult theme park. Visitors stroll amid replicas of the Eiffel Tower and St. Mark's Campanile, enjoy ethnic restaurants, and take a boat ride to see produce grown with hydroponics. Epcot is the only theme park that sells an after 4 p.m. pass, which allows people regular access for dinner and fireworks. Epcot, originally an acronym for Walt Disney's Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow idea, had no character or thrill rides when it opened in 1982. Future World explored technological advances in transportation, farming, and communication. Pavilions in the World Showcase featured cultures of other nations, but Epcot now features more attractions aimed at the Disney demographic. The theme park opened Mission Space, Soarin', Turtle Talk with Crush attraction, while Brad Rex was vice president there from 2001 to 2007. The Live and Seas attraction also received a Finding Nemo attraction under its watch. We came up with a whole strategy to make Epcot more fun and friendly for families, he said. Okay, what say you guys?
Well, we've been saying this for a while on the show, and I know Bob has been listening and harping, so I know he and listened to us harp about it. But we've been saying for years that there's going to be a change. There has to be a change. I mean, Epcot in the is a shell of itself in Future World, and it needed this, and we've been saying it was going to happen, and now it's finally announced. I can't wait, because I couldn't understand why they left so many buildings vacant in the front. We could understand. That's where I got the idea from. Every time something would close down, there was no announcement of anything new coming. And after a while, you can't have every building, half the building shut down in Future World without something happening. Do you guys agree with that?
Go ahead, Bob.
From my standpoint, we've talked about, Epcot being the park that was at most in need of some help for quite some time now. I mean, I was glad to see the announcement. In fact, I was really surprised that there was such surprise amongst the, internet Disney community that they were, finally announcing that something was going to be done. I think now comes that period where people are going to be questioning as to, what will it be? I had one reader of the website, listener of the podcast, come to me and say, I hope they're not going to turn it into all movies all the time. And I pointed out, well, they've already started that right with Frozen. So who knows what was in the future.
Well, I hope they continue of what we talked about the other day on the show. I hope they do something we mentioned the other day. And I think if it, I hope that's where they go, and I think that's where they might go. I think Marvel's going to have a major impact on Future World and Epcot, and with the Guardians of the Galaxy announced, that's one part. But I think we talked the other day about Iron Man. How awesome would Stark Industries be in the whole front of that park, like different Marvel areas in the whole front of that park? I mean, because face it, technology's so hard to stay ahead of now. But anything that they've put in that park in the last 10 years, 15 years, by the time they put it in, it's already behind in the times. Right. And I think that's the problem with it. When experimental prototype Community of Tomorrow came out, it took a long time for them to catch up with anything that Epcot had in there. Nowadays, they can't – there's no way you could keep up with everything. Don't you agree, Dan?
Yeah, I do agree, and it'd be very difficult. I mean, me and you have gone back and forth with this on, the Marvel movies, they're kind of behind. But I think you made the point that, the franchise, the movies were successful, and there's more movies still to come. So I guess as long as they're still relevant and the characters are still, being shown in movies occasionally, the park will remain more relevant than it would be that if you just built an attraction off a movie, a one-off movie that kind of just was forgotten about. That's the Disney's biggest challenge it has, as to how do you stay cutting edge. It is impossible, because but it takes 2 or 3 years from inception to go in the planning room to actually putting shovels in the ground and cutting the ribbon. So to make something that's going to keep everybody happy and focused and like the story said, keep it relevant, it's a very, very difficult thing. That's why, in a way, I mean, as much as I love the Marvel characters and the Disney franchise and Pixar, but in a way it's almost better not to use movie characters, so that it's not tied to something that you can say, oh, that's old. If you had, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, but they could do like they're doing with Avatar Land right now and Star Wars. They're waiting to release some of the movies like Avatar Land until the land's built. Maybe whatever they decide to start being, say, own these franchise, they could always use the franchise to keep it fresh. But right. they're not borrowing from anybody else. So maybe there's an Iron Man movie that's going to be released 2 years from now that they built around. So it's still new when it is being released, kind of like they're doing with Avatar Land with the new movies.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of looked at this story in more of a, 40,000 foot view. I mean, not that I don't care what characters come in there, whether it's Mickey Mouse or Buzz and Woody or Stark Industries, like you said, I really don't care. My perspective of Epcot, and I just hope that they do, stay true to their original vision. I understand there's going to be change. It's already happened, as Bob mentioned, with Frozen, and there'll be many, many other changes. But I would wonder, how much they'll displace World Showcase, for instance, if at all. We know there's three parcels of land, I believe, that are in between existing countries. Over by the outpost, there's some area over there. So, you know, what will they do? Will they put attractions to abut the countries that are, you know, abutting the open land? Or will they build a new country? Or are they going to get away from the countries? Because they said that, you know, they don't want it to be a museum and have replicas of everything. So maybe they're going to go in a whole different direction. I guess from my grumpy old man perspective, I just hope that they leave some of the park, you know, I'm not saying pristine like it is now or untouched, I guess is a better way to say it. But I don't want to see Iron Man all over my Epcot. That's all I'm saying. If it stays up front, I'd be good with that. But I have a sneaking suspicion that 10 years from now, we're not going to know. It's not going to be the Epcot we know now, certainly. But I'm just afraid they might go a little too far. That's my fear, personally.
And I think that's what this particular reader that reached out to me was thinking the same thing, you know, that kind of gets a little out of control. And there was also a little bit of a flavor of, you know, missing genuine Disney Imagineering in the parks. I mean, what, you know, if you take a look at the competition, you know, there it's, you know, filled with Harry Potter now. And you know, you can keep taking advantage and, you know, from a revenue and profitability standpoint, probably makes a lot of business sense. Take advantage of, you know, a franchise that just has a lot of strength and a lot of endurance. You know, obviously they did put Frozen into Norway, you know, so that was like kind of the first whispers of it being in Epcot. And, you know, Doug, you had mentioned on a previous show that I was on the whole concept of, you know, Marvel being in the parks. I mean, I'm as big a Marvel fan as anyone, and Iron Man is, you know, personally, it's got a, you know, for sentimental reasons, because it was a, you know, a character that was a favorite of both my son and I, I'd love to see in the parks. But at the end of the day, what I wouldn't want to see is Hollywood Studios completely transformed into an homage to movies, and then Epcot transformed into the same. And you know, it almost makes me feel like that if they take the wrong steps, Epcot and Hollywood Studios is going to be like, you know, sort of a complete competition to what Universal Studios offers, and you know, Magic Kingdom and Animal Kingdom more towards, with the exception of, you know, Avatar Land, Pandora, you know, more towards a traditional, you know, a traditional Imagineer Disney. And, you know, I just, it's going to be interesting to see what steps they take. But then, you know, as any Disney fan, I myself will be like anxiously, you know, waiting to see what the announcements are, to see what type of course they follow.
Yeah, but basically, I mean, yeah, you got in the Magic Kingdom, probably 3/4 of the attractions are all based on a story or a cartoon or something. I mean, I think that's why they went out and bought multiple franchises. So they could use them instead of just doing the, like, they don't want to just make Harry Potter World. That's why they went out and bought Avatar. That's why they went out and bought Star Wars. That's why they went out and bought Marvel. So it gives them a broader array of things to do, so it isn't just one thing. But I do agree with both of you. I don't want my World Showcase taken, and I don't think they're going to take World Showcase. I think they're going to leave it to countries. But I do think they're going to add more of a Disney flair. Like, I know I differ from used to. I would like to see Ratatouille at France. But that's just me. And I'm not saying you guys are wrong, but I enjoy that stuff. Like, yeah, that don't bother me.
I wouldn't mind that at all either, Doug. I mean, if they add a ride, even if it's a you know, a D attraction, or, you know, something like over in Mexico or something, it doesn't have to be an E attraction, but if it enhances the country and tells a story, and it's a boat ride, or, you know, anything, or even, you know, something to do with it that makes sense with the country, I'm good with that. I don't have a problem with that at all.
Like I've said 100 times, and I hope they steal it. I would love them to do some kind of, being Disney's all into the health craze, I would love them to see him incorporate something with Ratatouille that he teaches kids how to eat healthy and have some kind of show. Not nothing, because I didn't like Food Rocks. I couldn't believe it in my eyes when I was seeing that. I was like, where am I? It was like I was in the Twilight Zone or something. I felt like I had smoked something and didn't when I was in there. You know what right. I'm saying? It's like, what is going on here? But I would like to see some kind of cookie. Don't you think it would be cool to have some kind of healthy cooking for kids and use Ratatouille in some way? Even if it was a ride that took you through, and I don't know how they would do it, like a restaurant or a kitchen or how things work to teach you about that, and then have a seminar at the end on how to cook, something like
sure.
that.
Yeah,
that would work
awesome.
For me. What about you, Bob? He's pausing us again.
No,
I had you on mute. Sorry about that. Got something going on in the background. Apologize. From my standpoint, World Showcase needs to stay the same. If they're going to do anything with World Showcase, they can spruce it up a bit, maybe even add, another country or two, since there is technically room for it. I would love to see that. In fact, I've run polls on the site in the past about, what countries would make sense to be added to World Showcase. And, when I've done that, it's generated a lot of commentary. I think there's, a lot of Disney fans out there that would love to see them, expand World Showcase to a degree.
Oh, yeah. I mean, go ahead, Doug.
No, Bob. I'm going to say everybody's name. Go ahead, man.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, there's opportunity abound. I mean, you have what, the Honey, I Shrunk the Audience building. You got, I know Ellen is still running, but that's been rumored to be, changing to something. You got the Odyssey that we talked about, I think, on last week's show, Doug, where, it's closed all the time except for special events. That's a huge building, whether they, turned it into a restaurant or brought it back as a restaurant or used it for something else. You got the parcels of land between the countries. You got innovations east and west. I mean, there are all kinds of, in my view, opportunity in that park that they can do something. And I guess what I'm trying to wrap my head around, and it's difficult, literally nothing to go on, will it just be, in the World Showcase, Future World part of Epcot, or will it be, just where opportunity presents itself? I mean, they didn't say, so we don't know. I guess I just go back to my old argument that I've been making for a year and a half now, as it pertained to, Frozen coming in. I just feel that, with the Magic Kingdom in Hollywood Studios, which is going to be fantastic when it's done, with all of the new stuff that's in there, and with the Animal Kingdom and Avatar and all that stuff, I think that there needs to be and there should be an area. I'm not saying adults only, kids stay away. I get it. It's Disney World. There's kids everywhere. But I just hope that they, still leave some of Epcot, or if not all of World Showcase, the way it is, or as close as the way it is now. I just have my doubts. I seriously doubt it. And if they did do it, I would even understand why they're doing it. The end of the day, the kids are what drives the parents to bring them there, and what makes the money. And they're not going to care about, an old man like me that wants to just linger around World Showcase. They're going to go for the money. And I don't know. I'm just, I know I'm repeating myself, but I'm just afraid that this is gonna go in the wrong direction, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, but I think then, and I've mentioned this before, and I think Disney Springs is going to be where we're going to be eventually.
Oh, maybe right.
And I'm not being right. smart, and no, I wouldn't I be surprised if some kind of food and wine or something ended up down there. I've been saying that a while, but I too agree with you. I too do not want World Showcase to go away. I mean, that whole area is my favorite part of Disney World, but I'll tell you what, I enjoyed the Springs an awful lot this past trip. And the other thing I want to say is, to me, for like the past 5-6 years going to World Showcase, to Future World, there's only three rides up there for me. There's three things left, because the land I wouldn't even care if that went away now. And I know everybody will hate me for saying it, but it isn't the same. Since the skipper's left, it's a shell of itself when you ride it anymore. Half the time, you don't even see the – remember how you used to always see, like, all the scientists and all inside the building and everything?
Yep.
You barely see any – it's like a shell. It looks like
a museum.
There's nobody, museum. There's nobody in there. The Circle of Life movie, I love it. I love what it stands for, but that's long in the tooth. So really, I do Soarin', Test Track, and Spaceship Earth, and I never see Future World again the entire trip. Right. And what, I run no through mission, mouse ears.
What, no Mission Space?
I hate Mission Space. I've hated it since day one. But that's
you know,
the point.
I mean,
when's the last time
you.
Either one of you's done Figment? And I like Figment. And sorry, Dave, but Figment ain't what it used to be. When me and Brenda went on it in 97, I was singing Imagination for a week. After I left, and I liked the original Figment with the Dreamfinder, but the new one is horrible. And the Kodak Pavilion, like Michael, I mean, the whole Future World, and like I like the Turtle Talk with Crush technology, but it ain't for me. It's horrible. I mean, I don't know. The Nemo ride is horrible to me. Turtle Talk's okay, but the Nemo ride's pathetic.
I guess I'd put it like this: if they announced today that they were totally gutting out. You know, except for, let's say, Spaceship Earth. I'll even forgo Soarin' and Test Track, even though I know them are very popular. But just for the sake of me making this point, if they said that all the new enhancements and renovations or whatever were going to be strictly in Future World, I would be doing cartwheels right now. I'd be happy. If they said, you know, we're going to spruce up World Showcase, add a country, but by and large, it's going to stay. We're going to focus on festivals and... know, blah 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 in World Showcase, and we're gonna have Marvel and you know all that stuff that we mentioned earlier up front. I'd be 1,000% behind this. I just you know, fear of the unknown, I guess.
I'm sorry, Bob, and I'll let you go in 1 second because I'll forget because I'm getting old and tired. How cool would it be in the Honey I Shrunk the Audience Pavilion to have the Marvel Ant-Man in there?
That'd be awesome.
Wouldn't that fit perfectly, Bob?
No, I the comment that I would have is this. I mean, if I think about what Walt envisioned the experimental prototype community of tomorrow.
Well, it was never
like,
what he wanted. It ain't that
it
now.
It wasn't, but I'm pretty sure he didn't expect it to be Marvel all the time.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so I mean, I think... As I sit back and think about it, if let's say, you know, to Dennis's point, they basically just fired it all and started over from the ground up, and it became Marvel Park in the front, World Showcase in the back. For me, that just doesn't meld well. I mean, that sounds like two complete parks to me. In fact, it makes much more sense. To your point, when we were talking, I think it was the Untouchables Hollywood Studios podcast. Yeah. That Marvel's over there because it's a movie. Now, what do they do in Future World then? I don't know. It's probably going to be a mix of different things. But
during that, the reason I said it there, but I said I think it would fit better in Future World at Epcot because most of that Marvel stuff is the future. All the technology in that is all about the future with and things that are coming from outer space and stuff like that. So you could still incorporate. I'm not saying the entire front of the park has to be Marvel, but I think it would fit in perfect and you could still call it Future World is what my point was.
I hear you. And you could make the same argument that Star Wars could be up front too, because it's a similar type deal, right?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'd rather have anything up front right now. The only thing I enjoy up front is those three things in mouse gears.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. It's not that I'm not what you're saying is absolutely correct, Doug. I'm not advocating to keep the old attractions in Epcot. In fact, they should go. I'll lead the wrecking ball on them. I'm just not certain what they should be. Whether you know, and again, how can I say this? As popular as Marvel is right now, you know, what is it going to be in 10 and 15 years? It may not be. So I don't know if I'd want to.
It's been around since me and you's been born with comic books. I know that.
Yeah, but I mean, not in a theme park. work, though. I mean, your books live forever or until they disintegrate or whatever. But I mean, you know what I mean? That's what I was trying to say before. Maybe I didn't say it right. When you have something that's generic or it's not tied to a movie, it can last longer because it's not I don't know how to say it correctly, but we're going to get some movie presence there, but I think I agree with Bob that anything movie related, I think they should try. I don't think they'll succeed, but try to keep it in the studios. And I think that theme would carry well there. Maybe Future World doesn't, current Future World at Epcot doesn't have to be Future World. Maybe they, you know, can do something related to, you know, World Unity or something in the front of the park that doesn't have anything to do with the future.
To be perfectly honest with you, I mean, and to Doug's point, I mean, it never became really what Walt envisioned Epcot to be. But if they were to say, okay, World Showcase is World Showcase, but the entire park is going to be, a dedication to the countries from around the world, I'd be just as happy with that. I mean, in comparison to, obviously you got to fit attractions in there. You want to bring people in, which leads me to ask this question, really, not that I want to, continue the, make the conversation go longer, but I think it just occurred to me as we were talking about it, when Hollywood Studios is done and Animal Kingdom's done and Magic Kingdom has had their major refurbishment with Fantasyland, is Epcot the fourth park now?
Yep. Well, it all for not kids for it is. No, not no. For us, but for kids it is. I mean, and that's the problem with it. It's again, the only reason I was in Epcot as much as I was this trip was because of Food and Wine.
Well, it's interesting.
I would have rather been in Animal Kingdom or down in. I would have been more at Disney Springs if it wasn't for Food and Wine.
See, I don't agree with what I'm going to say here, but I heard this today that somebody said, no, but I think it's true that Disney feels we've been saying, oh, they're going to have Food and Wine around the year and all around the entire year. And they are. But the reason they're doing that is it's a stopgap. It's a gimmick because they can't, if they didn't have these festivals, the attendance would drop so dramatically that it would be the fourth park, Bob, to answer your question.
But Dennis, you're right. I mean, think about it for a second. Doug just said that the only three things in Future World that he'll go on are Test Track, Soarin', and Spaceship Earth. So what is there in the back?
In My the back American from Adventure, an attraction? And that's it.
Okay, four. So you got four attractions.
Not to cut you off, but I do like the Mexican ride, and I would do Frozen again. But none of the movies. The movies are pathetic.
Well, see, but that's the point, right? So and I can't believe, Dennis, that I'm going to say this because Epcot is my favorite park. But at the end of the day, we critique Hollywood Studios and Animal Kingdom generally as being a half-day park. Why is Epcot not a half-day park now?
Because it has illuminations at the end. That's why I go there anymore. And I love World Showcase. Don't get me wrong. But with all the – I mean, I'll be honest with you guys. And, Dennis, I feel bad that you guys – and I'm always honest, and I'm saying that more because of you two knuckleheads. But anyway, you didn't get to experience the Animal Kingdom at night. It was phenomenal. I could see me hanging out there at night now with the Tiffins and the safari
Nomad
ride
Lounge and
the Nomad Lounge, all that stuff. I mean, slowly but surely. And the other thing is how beautiful was when I was sitting out at Marimota Asia at Disney Springs. I mean, that's the atmosphere I wanted. And I could get that. It was nice.
I saw an article on the internet that was referring to Disney Springs as Disney's new food theme park. Because that's basically what it has become. And, we'll talk more, I think, a little bit about that.
But Knucklehead called that.
Dennis.
Yeah.
But anyway. But to your point, though, I mean, think about what you just said about Animal Kingdom, that you feel you could make that a full day experience. And Pandora's not even open yet.
Exactly. And I loved it. The night safari, it was the best safari I ever seen. It was awesome watching the lion. I mean, he went back and forth like 20 times. We sat there for 15 minutes. Moved more on that trip than the prior 40 times I visited that park and did that ride.
Yep. No, you bring up good points, Doug, and I think I came to this realization, I don't know when, over the last couple of years, but unfortunately, you know, Disney's not enhancing these theme parks to please us. We're at a point in our lives where they're looking at the next 20, 30, 40 years and where these parks are going to be for the youth coming along behind us. And unfortunately, we have our loves and we have our different things that we like, but there's going to be very little to no consideration given to us on that, and I understand it. I do.
But I agree, but I disagree with you. I agree with you what you're saying about the park, but I think they did the springs to take care of me and you, Dan, and Bob. That's how they're taking care of me and you. Look how much fun we – I mean, dude, one of the highlights of the trip was the night going over to Big River and hanging out. There's so many places for adults to hang out. You don't need to be in the theme park, and I love the idea of – hey, maybe I don't want to be in the hustle and bustle, but I can go to beautiful Disney Springs, and I don't have to go to Marimoto. I could go to the Boathouse outside bar. I can go over to the new bar they put over by the rainforest. What's the name of that, Bob? You go there all the time.
Lava Lounge.
Lava Lounge. I mean, there's lounges everywhere for us now.
Well, yeah, and that's a good point because, you know, I say it all the time, and I think I've heard Bob say that they do it occasionally. I mean, it's when I go to Disney World, it's not about the attractions.
No.
I mean, I enjoy some of them still, but, I mean, I could be just as happy just hanging with friends or whatever. And you're right. Maybe the Springs is the place to do that, and it has less to do with the theme parks, whether it's Epcot or any of the others.
How good of a time have we had that night? Now, and don't take me the wrong way, I am so glad we met up with Carmen and John and all of us. But imagine if we'd all met at the Springs, we'd have probably had a better time than dealing with the crowds. and we could have did, like I said before, we could have did food and wine with all those restaurants down there and probably ate better.
You're probably right. And like I said, that was a point of this article, that it's kind of a food theme park. But I mean, think about it. You know, Splitsville, if you want sushi, I mean, it's still crazy that it's a bowling alley, but it has great sushi. The one thing I mentioned to you guys earlier, I mean, we were planning to go down for Thanksgiving, but I've actually pushed it out to that trip out to January when this new, like, art festival starts. And one of the things I was dreaming of all week was my Thanksgiving dinner was going to be the firecracker shrimp at the Boathouse. I mean, you know, it was you think about Boathouse and Jock Lindsay's and Morimoto and Homecoming and Frontera and we're not even to the old restaurants yet, like Raglan or Portobello.
The new Fulton's, the Paddlefish, is going to have a beautiful bar, which they're designing for us adults. And then you're right. Then you also have the Deluxe Burgers and all these. Dude, there's 15, the Sausage Company. There's a billion places. Yeah, I want to try all these that I don't get to try. I could, like I said, we'd have probably had more fun if we'd all grabbed a table in the Springs than dealing with the crowds of Food and Wine. And I truly believe that.
I mean, honestly, and you guys know this because there's oftentimes – we're annual pass holders, but there's oftentimes where Mary and I will go to Walt Disney World and we won't go into a park. I mean, we're either hanging out at the resorts or hanging out at Downtown Disney because there's just so much new to going on. And part of the reason is, and, you know, I mean, like, for instance, going into Food and Wine, of course, we were over to Epcot several times in opening weekend and, you know, in October when we met with you guys. I mean, so we do go into the park, but, you know, we'll probably go months before we go back to Epcot. And part of the reason is the next time we go to Epcot will be, well, now that they have this art festival and their food studios. But generally the next time would be for Food and Garden, for Flower and Garden Festival, because they have the food.
Right.
I mean, and in the meantime, we do other stuff.
And I do love the countries, and don't get me, and I love being there, but when the crowds are crazy, I'd rather just go grab a seat at one of the lounges at the Springs and chill. I mean, I don't know. The last trip, then me and you couldn't get out of there fast enough.
Right. You have the abracadabra that we briefly went into that's now serving food as well.
Yeah, they listened to us. They said they need appetizers, and they got appetizers. I mean,
Crescent Lake is an excellent place when you consider abracadabra. You consider Bellevue Room up in the boardwalk, the Cruise Cup, the Ale and Compass in the yacht club.
Beaches and Cream.
Exactly. I mean,
again, we said Big River Brewing Company. You could head over to ESPN and have a drink in there, watch the game. I mean, those are all the areas that I could literally go down and not get my park ticket and have a blast now. I really don't need to go into the park. And I do love the parks, and I can't wait to see Avatar Land, Pandora. And I'm hoping for – I do love my Epcot, but it's – I felt myself wanting to be – I enjoyed this last trip. I think I enjoyed the Animal Kingdom the most of all the parks.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have a strong – you know, you love Animal Kingdom anyway, so that doesn't surprise me.
It's the American Indian in me, I think.
except for Harambe Market. He doesn't love Harambe Market.
No. I said it before. I like everything about Harambe Market, but that – freaking sawdust sausage.
So, folks, what he's really saying is he loves everything about Animal Kingdom but Harambe Market.
The sausage. The market was beautiful. My train goes by. How much happier could I be?
So I guess we just talked into ourselves and, all right, we'll let Epcot go then. Come on in, everyone. Do what you got to do, and we'll be happy elsewhere.
No,
but I do. I'm kidding. But, that makes a lot of sense to me, and I feel better about it. I mean, you know, you did mention Illuminations, and that would be the only fly in the ointment. I'd have to get over there for Illuminations at least once a trip if I didn't, go to the park, to go on the attractions and such.
And then my bangers and mash. Come on. I love eating in the countries. I love the countries. But the point was, last time, I'll be honest, if I'm down there next time, and Food and Wine was any – I wouldn't go back to the park. I'd just stay away. I'll go somewhere else. The Food and Wine is nice, and I enjoyed it. I've done it enough now. I would rather go spend my money on doing snacks around Springs.
Right.
But you'd probably still at least experience a bit of Food and Wine.
I would.
It's you have to pick your time, right? I mean, we talked about that. I mean, you can't do a Friday night, Saturday night. But, I mean, it's just craziness.
But my opinion is, and I've said this before, and I've said this before this conversation, I don't think they change the menu enough at Food and Wine. I don't want the same thing every year. I maybe want, but there's not enough diversity from the last 5 years in the menu, in my opinion.
You're 100% right. I mean, I'm obviously the king of complaining when it comes to that.
I'm going there to try different things. How can you try different?
Hello, Germany.
Seriously, though, Dennis, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, with Food and Wine, it's the same menu every year, and here they're doing these booths over the holidays, which that was one of the things I was looking forward to as well. And they're doing like a sauerbraten or something, I think it was on the menu for, one of the holiday booths. I mean, you're telling me you can't do that for Food and Wine? I mean, is German cuisine completely isolated to a brat and macaroni and cheese casserole? I mean, there's more to German cuisine than that. I've written about it before at length. It's just, I agree with you, Doug. I mean, at the end of the day, there does need to be much more variety, but then the argument against that always is something sells. So if it sells, they're going to make it.
But then open up. This is what I think they should do. And this is just my opinion, and I'm nobody. But they should open up a couple booths. They should survey and have two booths, call it Food and Wine Festivals Best, years past. Have the Kahlua Park Slider, your lamb meatball, whatever you want to put in there. Maybe each booth has five. Have the top 10 best over the years so everybody gets their Le Cellier Filet or whatever. That goes in that booth. And then the rest of the booth have different things every year. Because the reason I go to Food and Wine, because I want to try different things. I don't want to eat the same old seafood pie, fisherman's pie every year. Or the same – again, you like the lamb meatball, but I'd rather have a different meatball. Give me different flavors. I don't want the same flavor every year. And like best.
Even I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, the lamb meatball has been there like for 3, maybe even 4 years in a row. Okay, now move on to something else. It's sort of like maybe it needs to have a quote-unquote term limitation.
Yeah,
as to
term limits.
It's basically been there for 3 years. You got to move to something else.
Do you agree then?
Well, I was going to just pose this question to Bob, and maybe he knows, maybe he doesn't.
No, I don't know nothing.
I think he'd have a better sense of this. Do you think Disney, I know they market to, you know, as many people as they can, but do you think in your heart of hearts they market to repeat or return visitors to Food and Wine or first-time visitors to Food and Wine? What would you say the
– The locals.
So that's a good point. Because I think you're right. There's three options. There's the return visitors, the new people, and the locals. And my inclination would be to say that they're marketing more to the return people and the locals. Go ahead and make your point.
I was just going to say, if that's the case, then it speaks to changing up the menu like Doug was suggesting. I thought that maybe they were trying to get more new people in, or there's more people that only go to Disney once in a lifetime, or, you know, once every 7 years, where if the same lamb meatball was there, they wouldn't even remember what they had 7 years ago. Whereas us, where we go multiple times a year, or where we've been at every festival for the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, we remember things and you know, we're not as happy with the menu.
You bring up a great point, Dennis, because at the end of the day, I mean, I'd love to see those statistics, because at the end of the day, I would bet that we're the exception as opposed to the rule in that case, because I mean, I've literally had readers, I've had friends that I've talked to where they've said they wanted to go to Disney, and they'll say something to me like, "Oh, we're going in October. Is there anything fun to do?" Yeah, Food and Wine. but at the end of the day, I don't think that people, I mean, I knew what Food and Wine was first time we went. Mrs. All in WDW didn't. And in 2010, when we moved to Atlanta, we went down there about Food and Wine time and didn't go there. In 2011, that was the first trip that we made it to Food and Wine. And I told her, I said, look, it was a weekend trip. We had 2 days. We're going to be there. I want to go to Food and Wine. Kicking and screaming that I dragged her there the very first day. And the second day, so we made a deal. I got to pick one day. She got to pick the other. I picked Food and Wine the first day. And then on the second day, I said, what do you want to do? She said, I want to go to Food and Wine.
Wow.
But the moral of the story is, I don't know that maybe enough people know what it really means to experience Food and Wine. Now, you know, obviously you don't want to do it on a Friday night or a Saturday night, but at the end of the day, and you know, I don't mean to make this into a extended Food and Wine conversation, but I mean, it's a phenomenal festival. They've done a great job with Flower and Garden, making it Food and Garden. I'm putting up the air quotes there,
yep.
But it's a mini version of Food and Wine. And if here
basically,
at the holidays,
basically this year, Food and Wine goes from end of September all the way to freaking May.
Pretty much.
it's getting close, because this art festival, which is only going to run on weekends. Now get this, right? So it's going to run Fridays through Mondays.
Yeah.
Between like mid-January and mid-February, but it's going to run Fridays and Saturday nights.
Ugh.
So what do you think Fridays and Saturday nights are going to be like?
Yeah, the normal food and wine craziness. It's just, exactly. I like food and wine, but I think it could be they need to change the themes way more. And I know I'm stuttering because it drives me nuts, but I don't want to go down next year and have 90% of the menu the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's understandable. Absolutely.
I love, like I said, with the whole, out of this whole trip, what would you guys think was my favorite thing that happened to me on the entire trip that you guys heard me talk about? What do you think my favorite part was?
Coming to Laguna Bar to meet Mary and I.
Well, that's without saying. I'm talking about food-wise.
Oh, it had to be something at the
Bangers and mash.
No, that's given. But I'm saying what I experienced this trip. What do you think? Getting the sliders at the Brown Derby Lounge, having that duck slider. That was something I don't eat all the time. I liked it. I tried it. It was awesome. That's what I want to do. I want to go outside the comfort. I want to try different things. And everything at Food and Wine, it's like they're afraid to, like you're saying, if you go get this, you want to add the extra spicy mayo or add this or add that. Like, you're playing chef for them because they want to be down the middle of the road on a lot of this stuff too.
Yep, they're trying to keep the masses happy. They don't want nothing too spicy. You know, they'd rather – they always are on the side of blandness if they have a choice, I think.
It's the same thing, right? I mean, when they teach you to cook, right? Well, you would know this more than me, Dennis, with your son being a chef. But I mean, if you're going to put salt in something, it's better to use a little and keep tasting it than put too much and then you can't take it out, right? Yeah. And for me, you're right, Doug. I mean, from my standpoint, I'll tell people for my palate, I like the pork sliders to have extra spicy mayo, and I'll always ask for that. I've been for the last 2 or 3 years, have just been asking for spicy mayo, and they always accommodate you. But
And I don't want Dave and them picking on me for being negative, Ian, because Dave's negative enough himself, buddy. But anyway, I did love 90% of the festival. I talked about how the scallop was awesome. The filet was phenomenal. I enjoyed that Scottish, the smoked salmon. I did enjoy a lot of the things. But my point is for how crazy – I don't want to go back next year and have that same stuff again.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. But I would also say, too, like, you know, I never even went through my book yet, and I should do it. Or maybe we'll do a wrap-up show at some point. But, you know, my pre-festival top 10, how many items I actually ate, how many I didn't, just because I got going in another direction or stumbled upon something else that looked good that wasn't on my list. But I guarantee you I left 15 or 20 items out there that I wanted to try or I know I would have enjoyed that I didn't get a chance to try. So I could go to next year's festival, even if the menu is exactly the same, and probably not repeat any of the dishes I did this year and still have plenty to try and experience, I would say.
But anyway, we can go on and on and on and on and on. Yep. And yeah, my bangers and mash was awesome. But Bob, you got an article that you just dropped on the website about Raglan Road, correct?
Actually, Tuesday I dropped it. It's just a menu update. I mean, probably a lot of people might not know that they do a brunch at Raglan Road. I mean, if you look at the brunch menu per se, which runs from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., it really does include a lot of the things that are on the regular menu, fish and chips, bangers, burgers, etc. But in that article, if you go to allinwdw.com, the official home of the WDW Main Street podcast, what you'll find is kind of a little paragraph that I added in there, just sort of like making an assertion or a claim that for Mrs. Allin WDW and I. We've had a false start as far as dining at Raglan Road. It's an insanely popular spot. I mean, when I published the article, I had all sorts of reviews from some of the readers about what a wonderful time they have there. It's a must-do every time they go.
There was an awesome band playing there the last time we were there.
Some people pointed out the band, and some people pointed out that it was so loud they couldn't hear themselves think. You know, the point I've made in the article, though, is for us choosing where to go at Disney Springs, the problem is now that there's so much competition with all the new restaurants opening, like Morimoto Asia and Chef Art Smith's Homecoming and Frontera Cochina and the Boathouse and STK, Paddlefish when it opens, that it's going to become much more difficult for Raglan to compete, in our opinion, unless you're looking for that type of cuisine. And frankly, I and maybe Doug will agree with this, but, or maybe not, you know, if we're going to make a choice, then, you know, as to that type of cuisine, when we go to Walt Disney World, we're most likely going to go to Rose and Crown and not Raglan Road. So I guess the point or the question I was going to ask, some of the standby restaurants like Raglan Road, Dennis, I know you've just recently been to Paradiso, you know, Rainforest, T-Rex, I mean, Splitsville even. How do these older, quote unquote, restaurants compete when all of these newer restaurants open up?
Even House of Blues and even our favorite there, Wolfgang Puck. I mean, those, well, we see it with Paddlefish. They're doing a complete refurb, but I'd be shocked if you didn't see some of these other restaurants that we just named off that have been mainstays in the old downtown Disney. I would think they would have to do something to kind of liven it up and freshen it up. I mean, some place like Wolfgang Puck's, I mean, the food, the reputation stands on its own, and I think they'll do okay based on just purely reputation. But we all know that a lot of people make decisions based on eye candy or, you know, how something looks, regardless of what the food actually is. You know, it's unfortunate, but that's the truth of it.
And when it comes to Wolfgang Puck, I mean, you know, I know you guys are big fans of that restaurant, but I've actually had readers come to me suggesting that I should write a review because they had such a horrible experience there.
Yeah, my buddy John did too. But to get back at the Raglan Road point, I will say Raglan still looks beautiful. It fits right in there. I actually think Raglan Road looks more vibrant now than when it was first built because it was wedged in between Pleasure Island. And now I think where it sits across from Marimota and all in that area, don't you think it looks better now?
Yeah, I think geographically, the way they've built out that section of downtown Disney, Disney Springs. I shouldn't have said it. But yeah, no, I agree with that, Doug. I'm a big fan of Raglan Road. I've probably eaten there six or seven times over the years, and I have some dishes that I like there. But I can see when those step dances get going and the band, it can be kind of loud. And if you're wanting to have a quiet dinner and some conversation, you're right, Bob. But, it's probably not the place for you.
I'm sorry, Bob. I was just going to say, I think that feeds the younger generation of that bar because it was packed when I was there, one. Two, to make your point that you guys made earlier about food and wine and everything else, to us, Raglan Road is old and Wolfgang Puck is old and all these places are old. But the person that goes there every 4 or 5 years or 3 years or first time going down there, they don't know what just opened up or what didn't.
Yeah, true.
You understand what I'm saying? If you just went there for the first time, you wouldn't know the Boathouse is new and Raglan Road's 10 years old, would you?
The thing for me, though, if I were going there for the first time, and I'm going to try to, like, you know, put myself in that type of position, and, you know, I live in Atlanta. I mean, not every city's got a bunch of Irish pubs, but we have a few that are literally within walking distance from us. And I walk into Disney Springs and I see a Morimoto Asia, which I know is based on or, you know, sponsored / owned by, an Iron Chef. And then I look at a place like the Boathouse with the just phenomenal theming that restaurant has. It's the point to my article was we really do need to get there. I just don't know when that's going to be, because when we get to Disney Springs, I mean, how many places can you go to eat? And if I can go to an Irish pub here in Atlanta, just when I'm back in, you know, the real world, why when I'm in Walt Disney World would I go to an Irish pub? I'm more likely to want to go to something I can't go to here in Atlanta.
But you're in Atlanta, and that's where you're going. But the point is, again, is Disney Springs is set up, too, to for the locals. And that's their Irish pub. And there's a million people that live in downtown Orlando that want to go to an Irish pub. Because, dude, that was the most crowded spot when I was there both nights. There was more people there than any other restaurants. I mean, it was vibrant. The band was playing. I think the younger crowd enjoys that bar. And then also you got our buddy John. Our buddy John would probably prefer to go in there and grab a couple different beers off a tap than go to the Boathouse all the time. I mean, I could see – this is the way I look at it. If I lived there, Bob, I would probably do the Boathouse once a month or once every couple months because of the price of it. But I like the idea I could pop in the Raglan Road, have a drink, and have a decent meal for a decent price, if you understand what I'm saying. It fits for me. I like both. I like the idea they're all there, to be honest with you.
Okay. So that's a good path to go down, because if I imagined us living there, I think I'm pretty sure I know where we would go. We would go to Boathouse every once in a while. In fact, even on this trip when we were talking, or this trip that we've now pushed out that we were going to go on, Mary had said to me, she said, you know, we don't have to go to Boathouse every single time. And she's right. I mean, I know that it is, because it is a little bit pricier, but the place that we would probably go as our kind of, if we live there, as our regular downtown Disney spot would probably be Splitsville.
Mm-hmm. And that's wonderful. And that's what makes Disney Springs so awesome, because my fallback might not be there. My fallback could be something as crazy as Wolfgang Puck Express, because I love it there, or the Earl of Sandwich. But that's the beauty of down there. None of those restaurants seem to be – the least crowded restaurant of all of them was actually STK Steakhouse when we were there.
Yeah, I'm. You saw my review for people who didn't. Go to allinwdw.com, and in the search box in the top right, type STK. It'll take you to the dining recon. I'm a little worried about that restaurant's ability to be able to compete in this market of exploding restaurants.
And I'll trash that real quick before we go. I'm getting a little long in my own tooth over here, but STK Steakhouse, me, my godson, and my brother-in-law were walking around the Springs, and we had decided we were definitely eating at Marimota. Yeah, we were between Marimota and STK, because I wanted that grilled mahi-mahi sandwich that you had. So I'm glad I didn't end up going there, because you weren't thrilled about it. But my point was, there was nobody outside. There was like – it wasn't inviting. They had no – it was empty, but nobody was out there at the stand. There's no menu on the restaurant to look at it. You got to grab the menu off the rack. Now, you got a multi-million-dollar restaurant, and you're trying to find the menu to see what the heck they serve. It was just – I don't think their front of house is being handled right.
When I went by Doug, there was nobody at the podium, and I didn't even know if it was opened. I mean, I kind of went up to the podium and kind of peered in, and I saw some people. But I mean, if I didn't do that, I would have thought it wasn't even open yet.
We did the same thing, and we felt like we didn't – like somebody looked out, and it was like we felt like they didn't want us there. I said to my brother-in-law, it's probably you, but I'm just kidding. But you know what I'm saying. It's like – right. I didn't feel warm. It didn't feel inviting to me. Like, as soon as we walked up to Marimota, there was like 20 people there dragging us in. You eat. You know, come on and eat. And it was like we felt like we were wanted there. And the same thing, when you went to Jock Lindsay's Hangar Bar, there was an atmosphere. The Boathouse was vibrant. People everywhere. Raglan Road had music. We walked by his STK. It was like tick-tock, tick-tock. I couldn't believe it. And that was one of the places I was looking forward to.
You clearly went at a time where there was a lot more activity in Disney Springs. I almost did it, Dennis. but we went more at a lunchtime type hour, and there still was a lot of activity in Disney Springs and STK was empty. And I asked the cast members, I said, it's just a slow time of year? And they said, oh, no. The days are usually dead. It's nighttime when it usually picks up. I don't know what time you guys went there, but I think it was dinner time, if I remember correctly.
Dude, we got there. We had dinner around 6:30. I didn't leave till after 8 down. We got out of the dinner because we took our time. I was savoring every morsel there. But we walked around afterwards, and SDK was still the same way. It just feels cold to me. It isn't inviting. Yeah.
So there is multiple floors to that place, but I got to be honest with you. I can't imagine that they're seating everybody out of sight.
I would imagine they'd want to seat
first where people could see that there's activity. Again, I think I wrote that in the article. I'm a little bit worried the jury's still out on them. It'll be interesting to see if they're able to stand up to the competition. To be honest with you, and I mentioned it earlier, I mean, I should have kept the article here so I could tell you, you know, where I found it. But bottom line is the comment that I saw was that Disney had virtually created a food theme park in Disney Springs because they're just adding so many different quick service and table service venues. There's such a level of competition there, you are really going to have to be on your game as a restaurant. It's hard to survive as a restaurant anyway,
right?
But you're going to really have to be on your game in that environment.
All the other ones were packed. It was vibrant. It was festival. The homecoming was right across from Marimota there. Like right, we've seen people going in and out of there. Hey, Bob, you have to, before we go, because we got to go soon. Did you guys try the sushi yet at Marimota? Because they do have the outside counter where you can walk up and grab there too. You should do that.
What we have not. The couple of times we've stopped in, it's usually been around lunchtime, and it was before the outside counter had opened up, and the sushi bar opens later in the day. So we actually went in there wanting to try some of the sushi, and what we did was we sat at the bar. We each had the pork belly steam bun, and then we left there after having a beer and that appetizer, and then walked over to Splitsville and got our sushi there.
Well, you need to go a little later, and you got to try the chicken wings there. The chicken wings at that restaurant are phenomenal, the glaze that they put on them.
Gotcha. Chicken wings at Morimoto, spicy garlic shrimp at Spice Road Table.
You're good to go. So that's going to be it, guys. Go over to It's All in WDW. Bob is our senior writer over there. He does all the writing, and he does a phenomenal job of it. And go over and read the latest article on Raglan Road. You can look at his back articles. Look up SDK Steakhouse. You will be disappointed. Right, Bobby?
I mean, I thought that they could have done a better job. Now, generally what we'll do is if we go to a restaurant and have not a stellar experience, we will usually try to give it at least one more chance to see if it was a bad day.
I want to try it.
Yeah. And you should. I mean, just because it wasn't good for me doesn't mean it won't be good on a different day, and it won't be much more up to par for somebody else from a taste standpoint.
But I think me and Dan both can agree on this. Dan, if I walk back up there, even if I have reservations next time and there's nobody out there at that podium, I will cancel when him or her come out to the podium. Yeah, I don't think you should be going to a class restaurant like that and have to wait for somebody to come out when there's nobody there.
Right. You're right. I mean, atmosphere is everything. And, you know, just how they make you feel, that first impression goes a long way towards how you're going to enjoy your dinner. You know, taste of the food aside, if you're feeling not welcome and all that stuff, you're going to have a bad, you're just not going to enjoy your dinner. I don't care how good it is. So I totally agree with that.
Yeah. Let me use an example that could really, I think, hammer that home. There's an STK here in Atlanta. And we've never been to it. And the reason we haven't, and there's a lot of great steakhouses in Atlanta. There's one in particular that I've talked about on the website in the past, New York Prime, which is very close to our house. We love that place. And the reason we love it is exactly for what you just said, Dennis. first impression. Because the first time we went there was as if we had walked into our own kitchen. And that we walk in there today, and when we walk in, the fellow who owns the place walks up to us and says, "How are you doing, Mr. Saigon?" And wow. as if we go, and we don't go there. I mean, we probably go there like maybe once every 3 months. But when you walk in the door, they act as if they see you every day.
It's inviting.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's so important. I'll ask Mary, there's tons of steakhouses. Why don't we try here? Why don't we try there? And she said, why should we do that? We know we like New York Prime.
Well, and before I let you guys go, that's the reason why Le Cellier has got a bitter taste in my mouth lately. The last couple times I've eaten there, the waiters and the waitresses don't seem as – wasn't as warm to me. We went in the one time, and we're sitting there waiting for a reservation, and it's always late, 15, 20 minutes. And the thing that rubbed me the wrong way is a young couple come walking in and goes, would there be any openings? And they're laughing at them behind the counter.
Yeah.
Because they asked if there's an opening. It was just rude, if you understand what I'm saying. It's like they started to smell themselves there. And they wanted you in and out to turn tables over, like, ridiculously. And when you're paying 2 dining credits or that kind of money for a meal, I want to loosen my belt and lean back and drink a nightcap of a beer before I leave. I don't want to be pushed out the door. And that's one. And now when I go to my Rose and Crown, it's my happy place now. And that's how I feel when I go there. They treat you like they're happy to see you. And that's the difference between the two.
You know what ruined me for Le Cellier? Bangers and mash.
Yeah.
No, seriously. I mean, I really enjoy that dish, and you were absolutely right about it. Why should I not buy that for less than $20 as opposed to Le Cellier, where you get a good filet? I mean, I love the filet and the risotto combination. I mean, first time we had it was probably the best filet I'd ever had. Now I have been spoiled by this place here in Atlanta from a cut of filet standpoint. But at the end of the day, why should I pay 3 times as much to get that filet when I can get bangers and mash? And no, it's 2 different things. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to compare.
But if you're craving both, why not go to the place going to treat you nicer and you get a half-price meal?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what ruined me from going to Le Cellier. Ever since that you recommended it to us to try that, we haven't been back to Le Cellier since.
Yeah, and I miss it, but, you know.
Well, see, that we went full circle. We started at Epcot, went to the Disney Springs, and we ended up back at Epcot. Perfect and ending to the show.
We are a very, very versatile crew we are.
Well, that's going to be it, guys. Please go over to It's All in WDW. Check out our website over there. Bob does a great job. You can find us all on Twitter. You can find Dennis at Oak Manor. You can find Bob at It's All in WDW. You can find me at Grumpy6767. We missed you very, very much tonight, John. We can't wait to have you back on Sunday. We wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. You can follow John at Beer Solo. Please be safe on your travels for Thanksgiving, and we will talk to you guys real soon.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. See you on
the show. Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye-bye.